This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jimmy hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Countrymen, lend me your ears. It's your friend P2 here, Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from the cozy confines of Trinidad World Recording right here in beautiful Fort Worth, Texas. It's that hour of the week you look so forward to. Forget anything you see on television, all the NBC must-see TV, whatever they tell you you need to be watching and paying attention to. You, the P2 fan, the Texas music enthusiast, listening out there on RadioFreeTexas.org or PhilPritchett.com, you know better. You know what that hour of the week is you most look forward to, where you find yourself being challenged, being enlightened, and coming away after an hour of broadcast greatness here on the podcast where you think, thank goodness somebody out there understands. That's what we're doing here with me today here in Trinidad World Recording. The great man himself. We've been so lucky and fortunate to get so much of him here lately. Kurt South is here. How you doing, South?
I'm ready to tackle some issues today. We have a full docket.
You know, sometimes we sit down and we kind of like, man, what are we going to do in the third segment? I don't know. We play it on the fly, but man, there's a lot of things that have come to our attention here.
Today it wasn't a question of what are we going to talk about. It's a question of what is going to have to wait till next.
What is going to have to wait till next week? You know what? Kurt South walked in here. Bleary-eyed, as he often does, beard, eyes glazed over, his hands sort of shriveled up near his chest. He looked like he'd been up all night, I think, playing the Beatles Rock Band game. Is that right? Just playing Beatles Rock Band? Is that what you even did last night?
No.
Beaten down by the video games?
I hate video games.
Have you played Rock Band?
Yes.
For Guitar Hero, you played them?
I hate it.
See, I won't touch it. Now,
I think it ruins you if you already know how to play guitar and bass.
Okay, that makes me feel better.
Then I think it's because my wife and my other friends who aren't musicians love it.
Yeah. Well, but, see, I'm kind of, you know, like a pro golfer on the PGA Tour. He won't go play miniature golf. Or he won't pick up a goofy club or something because they think it'll kind of put a thought in his head or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear those Beatles songs and be pressing buttons. Like I'm, you know what I mean? I'm like,
but
I stay away from it.
My theory,
maybe that's silly. I don't know.
My theory might be BS already because none other than Colin J. Keaton, sometime bass player
for Kurt South and Phil Pritchett, the full band,
and he is the world's biggest Guitar Hero Rock Band nerd.
Is
In
he really?
Fact, he's the one that got me to play it the one time, and he will throw just these rock band parties where they will go on for 8-10 hours at a time, just drunken,
just ripping through the catalog.
Just
Keaton
playing,
just
Highway
sweating,
to Hell.
Red faced, just
with a bottle of Crown,
doing shots of Jaeger, and just trying to get through Aerosmith's "Walk This Way."
Yeah, so
on the plastic guitar.
Keaton's a world class musician,
aficionado,
but he likes Guitar Hero. But
Beatles rock. Of course, there's no bigger Beatles fan than me. I mean, that was kind of the band for me that, you know, aside from being into whatever the kids were into, when I was fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade, you had your run-of-the-mill 80s heavy metal. You know, we all got into Eddie Van Halen and stuff
everybody
like that.
Everybody had.
Everybody did. My mom gave me she had an old Sgt. Pepper laying around, and she said, you might like this. You know, and I remember just being insulted. I remember just like, I said, man, I thought it was like, that was just a grown-up music. That was going to be like Beethoven or something. Just dun-dun-dun, the Beatles, you know. And
it kind of was like
it kind of was like that in some ways. So, but man, I remember just putting on that. You hear the crowd at the beginning.
Yeah.
Then that guitar comes in. You know, I remember just going, whoa. And then I just floated. I just put on my headphones and just listened to that like every night, every day for months on end.
25 years later,
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, She's Leaving Home, Lovely Rita, Day in the Life, you name it, Benefit of Mr. Kite. Just mind, just didn't know what the hell we were talking about, you know, but just amazed. So that was kind of my Beatles deal. Well, the Beatles have been in the news here because of the big Beatles rock band game. Interesting topics there as far as, you know, everybody talks about it's such a big deal. It's a lot of hype. But, you know, the game will come and go. Yes, I mean, I don't know. People get tired of it and just...
It'll just be a...
Whatever. I mean...
A blip on the radar.
As big as video games are, there's nothing more hair today, gone tomorrow than, you know, the new Madden or the new... I mean, but it's the series you like, I guess. Which makes me wonder if they put all the Beatles stuff on this game, which apparently they have. What is that it? That could be the one... Are they going to update it every year? Beatles Rock Band 2? And I bet they do.
Start getting into Wings and McCartney solo stuff. Yeah. Just
that's right. Instead of Guitar Hero, you can if you really get into the game, you can have a fist fight with John Lennon, you know, arguing over the recording of the White Album or something. Or
Yoko
comes in and like, man, have you gotten past Yoko? Just no, dude. She sits in the corner of the studio. All of a sudden, McCartney starts playing bad, just getting all pissed. Just hostilities brewing in the studio.
If that was a part of it, I'd be
Ringo's like, he's like. Ringo's crying in the corner because McCartney's playing his drum parts. No one loves me anymore. So you got to go. McCartney's got to go over there and make
Harrison's amends. On the phone with Tom Petty and Bob Dylan wanting to put a new band together.
That's right. He's smoking a big bowl.
By the way,
for
the record, George Harrison, the greatest Beatle.
The greatest Beatle.
The greatest
George
Beatle.
Harrison of the Beatles. Well, man, also big news here. And I guess they got into this remastering the Beatles thing.
Mm-hmm.
For the video game. Is that how this whole thing got started?
I'm assuming that the remasters were to help segue into the video gaming world.
Now, that's always a
shitty
difficult
reason to remaster.
Well, that's an interesting term, remastering. I remember, you know, when the Beatles or any all the CDs started coming out, the old catalogs of things on CD, digitally remastered, crystal clear sound, you know, CDs remastering. A lot of people probably don't know exactly what that means. But remastering is, you know, you obviously get used to hearing the old Led Zeppelin, Beatles, whatever, ZZ Top, or any band. You have your mixes. A remaster, of course, is when you go back in to the original tapes, the original tracks, and you separate them out on the board, and you do basically a remix of the song.
Yeah.
Or at least... you have two stages of you record your tracks, and you have all your separate tracks. You need kick drum here, snare here, bass here, guitar here. You maybe got 24 tracks out in front of you, and then you blend them together into a mix. Then you have a stereo mix. Then you take that stereo mix and you master it. You run it through some additional processing, EQ, compression, to make it nice and loud and crisp and punchy and all that kind of stuff, and then you put it out there. So. Forgive me if I'm insulting everyone's intelligence out there. I think there's some people, though, that maybe don't know the terminology. So that's what you're talking about. So what they're doing with remastering something, they go back to Abbey Road Studios. They dust off those old 2-inch tapes they track to, I'm assuming, and bring it up on the board, the individual tracks, and they you remix it. And you remix it. Sometimes you'll see remaster. That's just where they're taking the stereo track and they're compressing it and all that for CD. But a lot of times you see remixed and remastered when they go all the way back to the beginning. And that's what you have with the Beatles here. And Kurt has heard it, the new Beatle Masters. I have not. And you're kind of a cynic. That's why you're so beloved on this show. Bearded, dour, caustic, didactic Kurt South. However, the Beatle remasters, what do you think?
Well, let me qualify my position by saying that I've been one of those people, and I'm realizing the error of my ways maybe, who's I've always thought that, man, it was just better back then. They did it right. It sounded better.
It is what it is.
Yeah, and, you know, you can't improve on the way it was. Those are the greatest sounding records of all time, blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Right, right.
All this new digital stuff is killing the business.
Yeah.
I was kind of one of those people. But, man, I think people like me who've thought that we need to get our head out of the sand and
technology does have its benefits.
Man, they're way better. They just sound better. You convince yourself, I think, because that's the way you've always heard it.
Right, right, right.
And you like it the way it is.
Right. I already love the Light album, so what are they going to do to it now? Right.
But, man, when it's remastered form, which, you know, I know a lot about the recording process,
I've thought.
But, man, the past few months I've actually reschooled myself on what mastering actually is.
Yeah.
And I've talked to a lot of engineers. And
there's a lot of voodoo science in there, man.
I will say this. I didn't know anything compared to what I know now about the process of mastering. And I used to be, you know, a year ago, I would have said, man, it didn't make any difference. Just put a good mix on it. But, man, I found that I was really in the dark on that.
Yeah.
And mastering's a lot bigger process than I realized. And it's a lot more important. It is. Mastering can make or break the overall timbre of the project. It really
can. No
makes
question
a
about
huge
it.
Difference,
no
especially
question.
When you're using, like I'm sure they did with the Beatles, the best world-class equipment, the best ears. You know, there are studios that do nothing but mastering.
Yeah, that's right.
Where the rooms are designed a certain way, they have, you know, equipment that's only for mastering, and it's its own process, just like tracking or recording individual.
That's right.
Instruments is.
And kind of a bit today, in today's world, sort of a lost art these days.
Well,
because,
yeah, exactly.
You know, with processing, I mean, we record here in the studio, and there's all kinds of just, settings, mastering settings. You can just bounce out the mix.
Presets in the box.
And presets, you know, and just, man, all of a sudden your mix is just loud and pumping, and, you know, but there is something lost there. It's like anything else, like instead of having one old amp that you're miking up, now you've got a Line 6 pod, you're like, hell, I got 200 amps that sound great. Well,
right.
That's true to an extent, but there's still an old art form to having the amp sound great and miking it and stuff like that.
Well, there's a reason why. There's a guy named Bob Ludwig who's master. He's just the world's most well-known mastering engineer.
Right, right.
And he's mastered every great album you can think of. You turn it over and Bob Ludwig has probably mastered it.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of research on him and read interviews with him and watched videos with him working in his studio. And I just had no idea what all was involved. And it blew me away when I saw, man, that guy is an artist just like John Lennon was.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't.
He's an expert. He has that.
Yeah,
that,
you know. And
he's put in his 10,000 hours, you know, the learning
and
how
some
to
of
do
those,
this thing.
And just like there are great mastering engineers, there are just these mix engineers who are the same way.
Yeah.
They don't track the instruments, but they take it and make it into one whole. They get it cohesive, and then they pass it off to a guy like Bob Ludwig.
And those guys' opinions are paramount and are not to be debated with.
Yes.
As my friend, my good friend Wes Cunningham, who Pritchard fans will know him as the co-writer of Snuff Machine, but he had a great great career, still plays a lot of music. Very talented, great guy. He's going to come do some podcasts in a couple of weeks. He tells a great story where he made a record for Warner Brothers, his debut in Nashville, and they sent it off to Richard Dodd, who is very well known. He mixed all the Wildflowers, Tom Petty, Traveling Wilburys, all that kind of Jeff Lynne produced kind of era. Richard
Full
Dodd.
Full Moon Fever.
Yeah, Full Moon Fever. Richard Dodd. Just, man, we're going to track it. We're going to send it to Richard, and he'll send it back. And if all you're hearing is drums, bass, and a vocal, then that's just the way it's supposed to sound. And so Dodd, who I got to meet around that time, I was at Wes's sessions. In fact, Richard Dodd was the first guy that told me George Harrison was dying. I mean, it wasn't in the press.
While
he was doing better, he's like, no, George isn't doing good. He's not doing well at all. You know, I was like, oh. I mean, he was a good friend of Harrison's.
Yeah.
So here I was hanging with these dudes. Pretty fun. But Yeah, Wes was in front of a bunch of guys, executives in his band, and Dodd comes in, sits down in a chair, you know, puts in the CD, and Wes's record starts playing. Everyone's just real quiet, nodding their head. And Wes goes, man, I didn't realize the gravity of what he was presenting. Mm-hmm. My record. So Wes says, like, hey, turn up the bass or something. You know, turn up the bass a little bit. Everyone was just horrified. Wes, you don't tell Richard Dodd that the bass needs.
Yeah.
And Dodd just turns around, just kind of red faced, and just grabs a fader of the bass and just pushes it all the way up so it's like distorting. Just, he's just like that. And Wes is like, I guess not that much. You know, just horrified. There's like, dude, you don't tell Richard Dodd how to mix your album. You just kind of say, okay, you know, he's presenting it in the best way possible. So,
well, recently I've found out how really good mix engineers are when I've been kind of interviewing by phone and email some different engineers to mix some stuff I have coming up.
Right. Blending that vocal and acoustic guitar perfectly together.
That's right. I talked to this guy in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Manhattan,
Kansas. Just an epic epicenter of.
He's worked with everyone from Roy Orbison to Coldplay to the White Stripes.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I was kind of telling him what I was going for, and he just goes, yeah, well, if that's what you're going for, then you can mix it.
Yeah, yeah,
he said,
yeah.
When you hire me, I mix it, and that's it. And the reason you're hiring me is because I'm a badass.
Yeah, yeah,
and because
yeah.
I know
what to do with it. That's right.
And the buck stops here, and I was just like, well, you know, wow.
That's very common and really commonplace, a standard practice. Maybe not as much now as it was, but even when Cunningham was – getting his after he did all his basic tracking, he did send they sent those tapes, the tracks to several different mixing engineers.
Yeah,
they had their tracking engineer wanted to do a mix of the record. They sent it to L.A. and New York, and I mean they had like five guys send back the album mixed. The Richard Dodd one was Wes's second album, but his first one was mixed. I think that's right by lots of different guys.
Yeah,
and then they picked one, and then they sent that mix to four or five mastering engineers.
Yep.
And Wes said, man, I came back and listened to it, and I could, it just, one guy's sounded dull. It just sounded a lot of low mids. It just didn't have the clarity in the top end. I just was like, man, I don't like it. It's hard to put your finger on it.
Yeah.
And he said, man, they threw one in that just had this warm, fuzzy thing, you know, just had that thing that makes you go, wow, great, you know, perfect. And they chose it like that. So very commonplace. There's no question that the mix and the mastering can have a huge effect. I mean, now if you have a great song like an old Ryan Adams song that, you know, it's just a guitar vocal and they don't even master it, you know.
Yeah.
That's great. There's no doubt that can be great. But for most of us out there, a great mix, you know, and a great mastering stage can really help a recording. And there's just no doubt about it.
Yeah. Can really make... I've learned we're right in the middle of working on some stuff of mine, and I've learned that, man, it makes just monumental amount of difference. Mm-hmm.
And I guess on these Beatles songs, you know, you listen to the old Beatles recordings, they're recording to two track.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of recordings, you would literally have all the instruments on the right and all the vocals on the left as you're standing there listening to a stereo. Because it was mixed for mono, and then when they had stereo, they separated it. That's the only way they could do it.
Yeah.
Very odd. Later on, they had four tracks, maybe for Sergeant Pepper. That's kind of amazing. They would record three tracks, maybe a trombone, a clarinet, and a flute. Then they would mix it to one channel.
Right.
And then that would open three channels for them. And they would keep recording and bouncing down and doing.
And they would put stuff like they would put a kick drum and a tambourine on the same channel.
Yeah, that's right.
Because if they had to dial out some high end on the tambourine,
that's right.
That wouldn't have any
boost
effect
the low end.
On the kick drum and vice versa. So they would try to play.
It's pretty fascinating to read. Of course, I've read every Beatles book in the world. There's a book called Beatle Gear, has about all their guitars and stuff. But there's a lot of great Beatles. Jeff Emmerich, I think, wrote a book about recording the Beatles and that kind of stuff, man. It's really fascinating to see how such an influential group like that, but was worked with very limited you know, they were recording at Abbey Road. I was like, ooh, Abbey Road Studios. People forget. I mean, back in the 60s, it was like used for like you put an orchestra in there and one microphone for a guy to sing opera. It wasn't built for like separating tracks and rock bands.
Well, no studios back then were
none of
like
them were.
That.
I mean, it was
it
just
didn't exist.
The Beatles were so influential in that respect. And say, man, what can we get away with? How can we add a couple different textures here? And you get into like, you know, Sgt. Pepper's Strawberry Fields Forever, tracks like that. We're you know, are still mind blowing, you know, in a lot of respects, especially when you realize the limited things they're working with, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, now we all have unlimited virtual tracks, you know, we can just keep adding stuff at will. But there was a lot to consider, man, making that stuff back then. You had very limited time and very limited space on tape to
well, to put it in perspective, for $200 today, you can go buy a little digital recorder.
Mm-hmm.
That's the size of a pack of cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
That has more capabilities than any studio the Beatles recorded in. So
incredible, man. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the Beatles, I think what they did here on the remastering, they went in yet again. George Martin, their old producer, and their son, his son Giles Martin, mm-hmm. I think that's his name. And yeah, they did that. Brought it all digital. They had to have put it all, you know, in a Pro Tools or something, digitize it.
Well, they
digitized it, and then they carved out those frequencies. Right, they somehow would scoop the, I guess, the acoustic guitar frequencies or something. Because if you had a track that had, you know, like you said, tambourine, kick, and acoustic guitar, it would be separated in the EQ, you know, field, and you could scoop out the kick and move it over here, and scoop out the mid range where maybe some of your acoustic guitar is, and then scoop out the high end where the tambourine is,
right,
and create three new different tracks. Is that what they've done?
From what the way I understand it, it's not technically a digital remaster.
Yeah,
I mean, they took it, probably ran it into a Pro Tools rig.
Yeah,
but then when they bounce it back out of the computer rig,
mm-hmm.
and through analog equipment.
Right.
So I mean, they probably wound up taking those mixes, running them like through an Avalon or Neve or something
right.
They're using a workstation on the computer.
Right.
But they're running it all through analog gear and then remastering it out back through more analog gear.
Right.
But it's all analog gear. The computer's allowing them to do it that way, to use that process. But I don't think I wouldn't say it's a digital remaster. It's a hybrid remaster of
right.
It's been digitally separated, remixed, then pushed back out.
So what's next, man? The Mona Lisa? Are we gonna go back and update her hairdo, give her some layers or something, maybe some highlights, just to bring it into the now a little bit more? You think?
Music's different, man. Painting's still painting.
But those old recordings, you think, are up for debate? They can always be reshuffled, remastered, messed around with.
It sounded better.
Yeah,
it just sounds better.
Yeah,
it just does. It gives whole new.
Well, it competes with today's recordings. The guys that are recording with all this awesome gear and compression stuff.
Well,
in the old days, the Beatles, they just plug it into like some sort of a tube console with just a with just a volume fader. I mean, they didn't have. Their acoustic guitar tracks didn't sound like the Jayhawks. I mean, they just, you know what I mean? They just.
Yeah, but it just has. It just has
its own charm, of course.
It has new life to it.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
It just does. There's nuances that you hear that you never would have really. Mm-hmm. Weren't remarkable to you before because they just weren't present.
Indeed. Well, some remastering mixing talk. Hold on to those old tracks. I don't know if I've got mine. All my old Phil World and Phil Comes Alive somewhere. Maybe we'll do some Pritchett remasters. Just put all the instruments to one side and my vocal on the other, you know? Just remaster. Remastering talk. The Beatles, man. Well, coming up, I can't wait for this next segment here. We're going to talk about a great band topic. Every time I get in the van or something, a great topic with other musicians. You hear people talk about, man, what's your guilty pleasure music? You know, some guy that goes, man, I kind of like Madonna, you know. Guilty pleasure, but also the opposite of that. Who is a band that you, Kurt South, as a bearded, jaded, caustic songwriter, we're all certain you love. We're certain you love this guy, but you just go, man, I've heard everything he's got. hate it, never did anything for me.
Boy, the list is long.
What are your guilty pleasure? And then also, who are you ashamed to say you like, and who are you ashamed to say you don't like?
The lists are long on both ends.
Coming up next.
When they're old, you never know what will come to you at times. You never know what will come to you at times. Perhaps in some other life, she would have made a more typical wife, but the world outside wasn't right. So her brother taught her how to fight. Her brother taught her how to fight.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Trinidad World Recording, sitting here with Kurt South. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com, or call me, 817-733-5256. Book Phil Pritchett and the full band. We'll come play in your backyard. Bring a couple speakers and just rock it out. Don't think for a second that we're too... we got other stuff going on. Give us a call. Book the band.
Do not call me under any circumstances.
Do not call Kurt South. Please do not call him.
Do not.
He is not in business right now at the moment.
Unless you want to play golf or fish.
That's right. Golf or fish, call him. Or give him something.
It's music
related. Or give him something, like a new pair of boots or something. Call Kurt South.
If you have something to give me or a nice recreational activity.
I want to thank everybody for emailing in. We got a real nice email from I don't have it in front of me. Mary, I think that's your name. About the last podcast, talking about how great Mellencamp was.
Yes.
And just that she enjoyed the podcast. So, of course, Eric Albers in St. Louis, and so many others. So just if you ever think, well, I'm sending off this email, Kurt and Phil, they're not going to see this. They probably got a team of people that sift through these emails. That's not right. I enjoy reading all of them. So philpritchett.com. Send us an email. Keep up the good work on the podcast. Or give it up, you hack.
My four-year-old
give
son
us some feedback.
Screens my emails.
Does he get you?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Hyatt South screening your emails. It's good you have that kind of security, that kind of
isn't it?
Publicity protection. Well, man, this is a daunting section here. I don't think we've approached anything like this on the podcast before. Your guilty pleasures. A great quote one time was when I asked Stuart Wiley, Stu, the great drum of the full band.
Hey, man, I'm just playing drums, man. Drink some beer.
Drink beer.
Anyway, he's got a massive vinyl record collection. I said, all right, Stu, say someone really cool is coming to dinner. You know, I don't know. Pick somebody. You know, whoever. Paul McCartney's going to – you're cooking, having a barbecue. McCartney's coming over. You know, and he's invariably going to go over to your record collection and go, oh, man, check it out, and start leafing through there. Before McCartney shows up, you can go in there and pull out one, mind you. You can only pull out one album. Go into your room and hide it under the bed, because you would be mortified if McCartney saw it in your collection there. Stu's like, oh, man, I don't know. I've got some old Toto albums and something like that, you know. Then he just kind of goes, Sonny and Cher live in Vegas. It's like Sonny and Cher live in
McCartney
Vegas.
McCartney probably
definitely
has that in his collection.
He probably has that. So that's sort of... what we're getting into here. The guilty pleasure. Who are you maybe ashamed of? You're not just going to pipe up and say, hey, man, have you heard the new, in mixed company, you would never say that. Also in mixed company, you would never say, you know, I never really got the Rolling Stones. I think they suck. You know, you just can't say that, but, you know, that's really how you feel. Guilty pleasure, Kurt South. Who do you like? You might be ashamed to admit.
Hootie and the Blowfish.
Hootie and the Blowfish. Of course, you weren't alone there in the 90s. What'd they sell, 17... 20 million albums.
Yeah, it was one of the...
Cracked Rear View.
Yeah, one of the biggest selling albums of all time.
Let her cry. The great Darius Rucker there. Was that him? Was that him in here?
Yeah.
Man, now a country act, evidently. Is that
now
right?
A country act.
So you're ashamed of the Hootie, huh?
Well...
And they're certainly not a cool band alike.
I don't understand, is it... You know, so many people bought that album.
Right.
Most of the people who dog Hootie now own the album.
Well, that's kind of like going to shop for vinyl, and you don't see any Dylan, Beatles, or Zeppelin in half-price books.
Yeah.
But you do see all 94, each copy of every Neil Diamond album.
Right.
Every ABBA album. every Linda Ronstadt album.
Right.
The bands in the 70s that sold tonnage that now people shove aside to a large degree and go, ooh, I don't, I can't believe I own that.
Yeah.
Hootie's probably like that of the CD era. Wouldn't you say maybe people kind of traded them in a little bit?
I would say so. And the thing that that album, in its context, in its time and place,
as good as anything that came down the pipe, wasn't it?
It was great.
It was refreshing.
Great. Look, this is what I tell people who all the guys who immediately
look at. I want the listeners to hear Kurt South staunchly defending Hootie and the Blowfish right here on the P2 podcast.
Immediately
his guilty pleasure.
Start questioning my heterosexuality when I say this.
You always bring it around to that.
Yeah.
Why is that? Jeez.
The thing is you put a guy who can sing, a band that plays well together, and the catchiest songs you can think
good
of.
Good songs, yeah.
And for some reason it sucks and is queer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. That, yeah, that's right. No,
I can listen to Darius Rucker's voice and go, God, that is kind of annoying. But dude,
yeah,
I've seen them live and they just kick so much ass.
Well, they were definitely from kind of
they were so fun.
They were from kind of the Dave Matthews school of not so much in like musicianship or something, but you know, touring their asses off up and down the East Coast, Southeast,
and I
forever.
Think
you know,
I think
that kind
part,
of
I think that's part of it with me was they were kind of a big regional band before they ever got big.
Well, you're Kurt South, of course, from Virginia. You know, that region.
They were kind of locals almost.
Right.
And everybody knew of them. And, yeah, I mean, they were just a real hardworking band for years before they ever hit it big.
That's right.
And, man, they delivered the goods live. And, hey, I've seen all the hip, cool bands, you know, that gone to see them, and they were just up there sad looking around their shoes. And it was boring as hell.
Yeah.
But supposedly they're genius.
Yeah,
but you go to a Hootie show and everybody was just going, man, these guys are great. Everybody has fun.
Yeah,
I think well, now what it's supposed to be like?
Yeah, that's right. Very not too heady.
I mean, I understand why people hate them to a certain degree, but I also
they're just so successful. You know, if they'd only sold a million records instead of 20 million,
they might still have
a cult status.
Yeah.
You know?
But,
so who knows?
You know, I mean, Darius's voice does drive me nuts sometimes.
Yeah.
But man, for my $30, give me Hootie over Spoon any day.
Oh, we're going to keep that as a drop. I'm going to play that repeatedly here and there on the podcast. You know, I have a million. I think being in the Texas music pantheon where Jerry Jeff Walker, Willie Nelson, Robert Earl Keen are rightly so. The Kings, a lot of the guys who come in the studio, that's really their point of reference. They listen to Merle Haggard. They grew up on country music.
Yeah.
But, man, I didn't really get into, like, those kinds of guys until, like, college. Kind of when I went off to school. As I've said so many times, you know, I came up with the Eddie Van Halen, you know, in the 80s. And the other cool 80s-type music, you know, U2, R.E.M., The Smiths, The Police, you know, that kind of stuff, which kind of makes me sort of an oddball later on.
See, that's I came up on the same thing.
Yeah, but, you know, just backstage with a lot of these country guys, you know, hey, man, do you have this record? And you start talking about, yeah, you are a little sheepish to bring up the Smiths or something. But one guy who is kind of out there, a guilty pleasure for me that I was always kind of into sort of the prog rock kind of stuff, progressive. Man, I love, like, Peter Gabriel, Genesis, stuff like that, which a lot of people would...
So you have shocked the monkey before.
I have shocked the monkey.
This is an on-air admission.
No, man. Gabriel's one of those guys that, you know, I mean, just British, odd. There was some... I can't remember what track it was.
Sexually ambiguous.
No, he is not. He's got his own studio in Bath or something. You know, very artistic, really into recording. I think he recorded one album or something, like suspended from the ceiling upside down in a harness.
Yeah,
like that's how he did his vocal tracks. Games Without Frontiers. Of course, people might know, like, you know, In Your Eyes and Sledgehammer, Red Rain. And so I don't know. I take a lot of flack for that because he's kind of a weirdo techno kind of guy. But something about him always appealed to me. I don't know.
He's got some great songs. I mean,
I love his voice, the high falsetto, you know?
Yeah.
And he's
but that's not a guy you bring up while drinking a Shinerbach at the White Elephant.
No, you just go, hey, man.
You heard the new Gabriel record?
Yeah.
It's a good way to just get beaten.
Yeah, you don't want to bring that up. kind of a guilty pleasure. I tried to get the band to play We Got the Beat one time by the Go-Go's. Not met very warmly with that. See the people walking down the street. You know.
Just an estrogen-filled fist pumper.
Yeah. Just what College Station needs. This song's by the Go-Go's. Feel free to sing along. No, I do kind of like that, the prog rock stuff. You and me talk about, like, of course, I don't know how guilty it is, a band like Rush.
Oh,
of course,
man,
a lot of people hate,
yeah.
But I love Rush.
I love Rush.
Me too.
God, back in high school, I just...
Dude, Moving Pictures. I thought that was the greatest hits album for a long time.
Yeah.
I was like, man, every song is just so great. Red Barchetta and Limelight, Tom Sawyer. Oh, man. But Rush is one of those bands like that, you know, you'd get a lot of shit from, you know, from country fans.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, so who knows, man? Maybe not quite as guilty. Not quite as guilty as you think. Those are bands that sell a lot of tickets, you know?
I want to give more credence to my Hootie and the Blowfish
thing. Okay, God, you just will not stop defending Hootie.
Please,
the floor is yours.
A couple weeks ago,
the
esteemed drummer for Kurt South and the Healers, one Nate Full Moon Coon,
yes.
Who was very much a hipster, just cool music kind of guy.
Right, right.
Was in Nashville at the Grand Ole Opry backstage.
Okay.
Where Darius Rucker was performing.
Well, kind of a country act now.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
And it was Darius Rucker and Aaron Tippin. They were
The great Aaron Tippin. What did he say? Kiss this. Can I do me on the road?
And I was so curious to hear what Nate Full Moon Coon would have to say about this show.
About Rucker Live.
I mean, Nate would just be up there in skinny black jeans,
yeah.
White t-shirt, some sort of plaid
fitted
vest.
Fitted jacket when it's 112.
Yeah, and just like a little pork pie hat or something.
Yeah.
Just looking real cool. And he comes back, and not only is he ready to tell me the news, he's excited about what he has to say. He goes, man.
He has seen the future of rock and roll, and its name is Darius Rucker.
Aaron Tippin sucked. But, dude, Darius Rucker, I'm a fan. I'm just a fan. He got up there and owned a room like I've seen few people do before.
Wow.
And there is no doubt in my mind why he's a star.
Yeah.
So there, you know what? It's not a guilty pleasure. I like him. Screw you.
That's right. You need to write a song about your love for Darius Rucker, Hootie and the Blowfish. Another local guy that you like up there, I'm not saying this is a guilty pleasure, but I know you once went into a bathroom in a half comatose state.
Yes.
And urinated.
Bruce Hornsby.
Next to Bruce Hornsby. The great keyboard player.
That's not even close to a guilty pleasure.
No,
that
it's not.
Like,
but, you know,
shit.
Sort of a... ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
Ding.
Bruce Hornsby is unabashedly one of my biggest heroes.
Is that right?
No doubt.
Hornsby.
You can take
kind of
Steve,
the Kenny G of the piano.
Take Steve Earle, give me Bruce Hornsby.
Yeah.
Kind of the Kenny G of the piano. See, you've never listened to Hornsby. You have no clue.
I'm just trying to stir the pot a little bit.
God.
Kenny G.
No, Bruce Hornsby, man. That totally legit.
Yeah.
Just did a record with Ricky Skaggs.
Kind of a drinker, Hornsby.
He was back then.
Back then, yeah, kind of.
I was 16 and he offered me gin and tonic.
Like 6'10", right? Tall?
6'8".
Wow.
Yeah. And this was at his peak. This was when The Way It Is was top of the charts.
Doodling, doodling.
Walk in the bathroom.
Some things will never change.
Relieving myself.
And holding yourself up on the wall, just
and I just look over,
and who's there?
And I'm like, God, that guy looks familiar. And he just kind of turns and catches me looking at him.
Dude, anytime Kurt South is urinating next to you, and he's looking at you,
you have
cause
to worry
for alarm.
About.
That's right.
And he just looks at me, and I'm just like, are you? And he goes, yes, I am.
Yeah.
And he invited me to his big. He used to do a kind of a Christmas New Year's.
Yeah.
Homecoming show every
right.
year in Virginia. Told me that I could contact his manager and he'd give me free tickets to the show. And
awesome.
Glad I
dude.
Was a fan and offered me booze.
Hornsby.
I was there with a youth group, so I didn't
take
him up on the booze.
In the church, with the church group?
I wanted to.
Oh, man, yeah. I know.
But Hornsby's great, man.
Yeah, a local
another
hero,
guy,
Kurt South. Yeah.
Another guy who live will just.
Again, certainly not a guilty pleasure.
No.
But maybe a guy that a lot of people don't know a lot about. They just know him for the the curly hair and the piano.
Yeah, he's
what about now? Here, now, what's the opposite of the question? There's a couple guilty pleasures maybe you wouldn't voice backstage at a
Red Dirt show
type thing. What's somebody that everyone backstage at the same situation at a country show, at a Red Dirt type festival deal, would you not dare stand up and go, you know, I know everybody thinks that guy's great, but I think he sucks. Who? Kurt South.
I don't like Jerry Jeff Walker.
Oh, Kevin Haggard. The patron saint of the full band has just hit the floor. Somebody call 911. He's down there in Houston, Texas.
Wake Haggard.
Face down.
Wake up.
Face down.
Haggard, come back.
Just come back. Come back.
Hey.
Tell his lovely wife, Emily, to throw some water on his face. Just check his pulse. Oh, man. You know, I met Jerry Jeff Walker one night. Well, I've met him several times. But the first time I met him, I was in a college, Georgetown, Southwestern University. A friend of mine tended bar at the Georgetown Country Club that I didn't even know existed. It's just some kind of a little country club out there. He said, hey, Walker's playing some private party out here. I'm just like, what? I mean, I've seen him at like Green Hall. I've seen him do some big stuff.
Was he drunk?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. I couldn't tell. So, I go into the bathroom. Jerry Jeff's in the bathroom with a little practice amp and a little, like a black electric guitar or something with a whammy bar. He's plugged into it. He's just tuning up. He's just in the bathroom. And he looks at me. There's kind of awkwardness. You know, I'm just some, you know, stumbling college kid. So I go we go into the bar there. There's this, I don't know what it was for. It was some corporate thing, you know, and so my buddy's tending
bar.
Were
the Gonzos there, the whole band?
No, it was just solo.
With an electric guitar?
Yeah, two speakers on sticks. This was maybe like 1991 maybe. And he comes out, he plugs in direct, and he's in the corner of a room. I mean, no stage, two speakers on sticks with an electric guitar running direct and a mic and like 28, 30 people in there. And, man, he just does his whole deal, man. Just does his whole show. It was great. But I couldn't believe how into it he was. He was just so professional.
Yeah.
Hey, the pickup truck's out here. Well, you know, leaning in the truck, trying to do the best I can. Did the whole, told the same stories, everything. And, just did a show. Everybody was yelling out requests. He'd play them and stuff. And then afterward, he quits playing. He walks immediately into the golf shop and starts picking up some shirts and balls and stuff. And,
Spending his paycheck.
Got Pat Green told me one time that he played golf with Jerry Jeff, and he said it was just wheels off. They're out at like Barton Creek, some nice club. Walker just like takes his shirt off, like plays shirtless. It's like sunburned, kind of drunk, just throwing clubs and cussing. Just, shit. You know, it's like hitting the, you know, it's like people looking over at him.
Now I like Jerry Jeff.
Jeez, man.
That's the guy I want to play. That sounds like me when I'm
got a bad temper. You know, he just took a few shots to get out of the trap. He's just cussing, throwing clubs, shirtless. Breaking all the rules. Pat's like, oh my gosh, you know, it was pretty wild.
When Pat Green's commenting on your drunken behavior, you know.
On the golf course. That's kind of like the old Ron Wood story. When the Rolling Stones come to you and say, look, man, you're drinking too much, man.
Yeah.
When the Rolling Stones intervene on you, you've got a big, big problem. The
lines have been crossed at that point.
Oh my gosh. Well, who would it be for me, Kurt? You know me pretty well. Who's gonna be?
Steve Earle. You hate Steve Earle.
You know what? You made a good point, though. You said
you have to listen.
You have to listen
all
to everything
stuff.
He's had and stuff to really say you hate him. I don't know. I just he beats me to holy hell, man.
Well,
he always has. And you know what? All these guys sing like him. And maybe, I'm sure I'd go through his catalog, and I have. And things are good. There are good stuff in there. But, man, he's just such a chest thumper for so much stuff that I get tired of hearing about. He's probably ashamed of his wild lifestyle and all that. But he just sells. He talks about it all the time. He just, you know, I had three needles in my arm and a bottle of Jack in my throat. And just I'm just like, how do you just, you know, like it just goes on and on and on. And you know what? He spawned a million
mediocre singer-songwriters. Me, one of them.
Kurt South being
the chief among those.
I don't know. I missed Steve Earle a little bit. I think the guys, his popularity really was with the young guys, kind of younger than me. I feel like.
He's gone through a resurgence that the young guys caught on. But man, his first record came out over 20 years ago.
86.
Yeah. So. But, you know, and hate might be too strong a word. You don't hate Steve Earle.
Another thing
you
was,
just don't,
oh, go ahead. Yeah.
You know, you don't get it. You don't get what all the fuss is
about. I mean, there's a lot of guys in this deal. He is their number one favorite guy. Yeah. Bob Dylan sucks. I love Steve Earle. I'm just kind of like, okay, whatever. You know, and, man, another thing is I saw Steve Earle play in about 1988, opening for Bob Dylan at Starplex.
Yeah.
It was the most embarrassing, ridiculous, horrible thing I'd ever seen in my life. I'd already been to a lot of concerts, and I'd heard Copperhead Road was the big single. You know, it was at that time, and I said, oh, I know this guy. He comes out there and was just the most brash, cocky, stupid, just said a bunch of dumb stuff, just insulted everybody. Yeah. Of course, this is why people love him, right?
Right.
But it was just, it was comical, man. He was so out of his league and just, it was just embarrassing. And I don't know, that was kind of my first experience with him, and it's hard to overcome that. Ever since then, every time a song of his comes on the radio, or Steve Earle talks about almost dying and hanging out with Townes Van Zandt, I'm just like, oh, please. Oh, come on. You know, give me a break. So there's nothing wrong with liking him, but he is a lot of guys' favorite guy.
Yeah.
And then the next breath, they'll just talk about, you know, what has Dylan ever done? And I hate the Beatles, but I love Steve Earle. And I rather than showing you as an enlightened person, like, oh, yeah, just to me, it just shows your idiocy. And you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of like being really into Kenny G and saying Beethoven sucks. You know?
Yeah.
Or you like Harry Connick Jr., but Mozart blows. I mean, how can you just kind of like, okay, whatever. That's my two cents there. Yeah, I probably wouldn't voice that backstage at the Red Dirt Roundup.
Well, my biggest thing with Jerry Jeff was all the songs that I liked hearing him do.
Someone else wrote.
I just realized that, oh, well, you just need to go buy the Guy Clark record.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't listen to Jerry Jeff, and it doesn't piss me off or anything. But I never listened to him and had the revelation that a lot of guys did.
Man,
it just
never
hit me that way, you know.
See, but Walker, they kind of go back to the live deal. See, I saw him at this weird setting,
and he was great.
And he was great. And man, that really makes all the difference sometimes.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people go see Dylan, and he's so terrible and hard to they won't give him a chance. And maybe rightly so. I don't know. A lot of people would say, myself included, a band's only as good as their live performance. You're kind of like,
yeah, that's
man,
true.
If you just suck live, then I don't know. Then what are your records really worth? I talked about last time, Scarecrow's great, but Neil Mellencamp was a big disappointment to me live. And I know he has a great reputation as a live guy. I caught him on a bad night or something. So who knows? Now, did we just broadcast here on a Texas music-based show that you really don't like Jerry Jeff Walker and I really don't like Steve Earle?
Yeah.
We might have just buried our whole deal there. Is it over? Singing the praises of Hootie
really
and Peter Gabriel?
Never really got started, did it?
Did it not get started? I don't know. Forgive us out there, folks.
But you know who really does
Phil and
suck?
Kurt, you know, who knows?
Who really does suck is the Doors.
The
Doors, people.
I don't know if we have time to get into that.
Well, I had to put the period on the end of the sentence.
Well, you know what? You can always come around to guys. You can always give guys a second chance. Stu is really like, man, Led Zeppelin, I don't know, man. I never really got into them. Now he's a huge fan, of course. Once you really dig into it, man, a big guy for me would have been like Neil Young, man, probably like 5 years ago. He kind of beat me a little bit.
Yeah,
people talk about how great
Neil
he was
Young
all the time. I was like, oh, whatever. And I went and saw him live. Didn't think a whole lot of it, you know, just going on and on, bitching about something.
Yeah.
But, man, slowly, just stuff snuck up on me, most notably the live thing.
Massey Hall.
Oh, my gosh.
That's
it's
awesome.
So amazing. And so I kind of realized when I heard that really didn't know some of his really, really early stuff. And I kind of dug back through it and was like, wow, holy crap. You know, and really become a huge fan of him ever since.
Well,
but
40 years later, the Doors still have not snuck up on me.
Mm-hmm.
And they never mm-hmm. will.
You know, I went and saw where Jim Morrison is buried in Paris. Have I ever told you that story? Of course, this was at the height. I was in Paris, or I went to on a trip to Europe.
Is this when you get your picture taken?
Yeah,
well,
you know where I wrote Maria and all that? 90, right before I went to college. 30
you
days.
Wrote Maria?
Yeah, man, you know, yeah.
That was yours?
That was mine, yeah. Not a cover, not a Townes Van Zandt song. went to, I mean, dude, it was great. Went with like 30 kids, 30 days through Europe on buses. It's like being in a rock band, like two or three nights in each town, all through. Oh, man, just going nuts. We get to Paris, and we know Jim Morrison's buried there in the cemetery along with Chopin and Oscar Wilde. There's all sorts of, it's this old, ancient cemetery, just all the gravestones are just on top of each other. Really creepy, and just goes forever. Looks like something out of Sleepy Hollow or something, you know. And so this is the height. The Doors movie was out. There'd been a big Doors kind of resurgence deal. Val Kilmer.
I'm gonna take a short nap. Wake me up in the next segment.
Come on, hey, come on. Well, wait. I'm telling. This is about me here.
Oh, okay. Sorry,
Jim.
I'm back in.
It was pretty wild though. So we just ventured through this graveyard. There's all this graffiti everywhere saying like Jim with an arrow. Or, break on through.
There's on Oscar Wilde's headstone.
Yeah, leading you there. All this graffiti and stuff. It was kind of a letdown. We get to this plot of muddy earth covered in, like, cigarette butts and empty beer bottles and a couple of dead flowers. And it just says Jim Morrison, little headstone. There used to be a bust of him there that somebody stole. You know, it's not there anymore. And there is his, at one point was Jim Morrison, so they say.
Wow.
His dead, bloated, drunken carcass.
Bad poetry reciting carcass.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what, man? I always, I don't know. I went through a big Doors thing. I know you hate the Doors. They beat you to high holy hell, as you like to say.
If the Doors were rock and roll, I would be listening to classical.
Yeah.
If that's all that rock and roll was the Doors.
Yeah. But man, he sang from a dreamlike state or something. He was just, I don't know. So there's something appealing in it for me. Not for everybody.
If I ate handfuls of peyote, I would sing from a dreamlike state too.
They so didn't live in the real world.
No.
Him. I mean, he was dead by the time he was 27 or something.
Yeah.
He was just a drunk young guy, you know. But there's something just. In the studio, those recordings, he's just so somewhere else, man. He's just not worried about his phone bill. There's just nothing. He's not married, didn't have kids. He's just in leather pants and just out of his mind, and he's screaming and lurching around. And I don't know, there's just something appealing. I go, man, this guy was never, he was never one of us. He just never was.
There's about 10 guys at the state hospital in Wichita Falls who do that too. Yeah. You can go up and watch them for free anytime you want.
Yeah, dude. That's true.
Though he did expose himself at that concert in Miami. That was kind of funny.
Yeah, he made the.
I've always wanted to do that.
I know. Have you done that yet?
No, but I
will. That'll be next at the next White Elephant show.
Will Hobbs did this past Saturday.
Oh, man.
He did.
The great Will Hobbs, Kurt Sounds bass player.
Not that great.
Well, man, there's some guilty pleasures and
good
some
talk.
And some shameful admissions of who maybe you really don't like. You know, it takes a lot of nerve to stand up and go, man, I don't get the Rolling Stones, man. All right, I think they suck or something. So we're trying to pave that way. Make it, you know, we're all entitled to our own opinions. So there's some talk. Well, what are we going to talk about in the vault here? Are we going to further push our luck with some prog rock? No, what are we doing? The Great So by Peter Gabriel?
Sure.
Man, let's do that, man. Daniel Lanois produced so much Bob Dylan, Emmylou Harris, The Joshua Tree by U2. I just want to throw Gabriel out there on some people here, maybe not that familiar with him. Play some stuff from him.
Oh, what's that? That's the sound of people logging
off logging
their computers.
Off. Just logging off, turning off their computers, running, and just throwing in that Ragweed CD. Just what are these guys doing? As is their right. Hey, we're here to I don't know, shine some light around here. I'm going to try to defend my – you got to defend your position on Hootie. I'm going to try to defend my position on Peter Gabriel next.
I get so lost, so
fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast. With me is Kurt South.
Yep.
Email us, phil@philpritchard.com. Let us know, man. It's imperative, everyone, that you occasionally shoot us an email. Let us know you're listening. That really helps us kind of keep things going. Hey, this guy wants to hear about this, or she commented about this album, or wanted to hear a story about this. Man, we take it all. It really helps us do the show. You know, when you hear the show, Kurt, are we throwing a bunch of commercials out there, sponsorships, beating people over the head with advertising?
No, but we will soon.
We will soon, God willing. If you got a big check to write out there and you're from a corporation, call me.
John's Muffler Shop on Lancaster at 820.
Good people at Papa John's. No, we're just here talking about music, etc., etc. So, this whole deal runs solely on your participation out there. I'm talking to you out there in the Midwest and Texas, in the Southeast, up the East Coast, Canada. All of you listening in England and Australia that we love. New Zealand.
Venezuela, let us hear
Venezuela.
From you. Give Raul us a call.
From Venezuela, man. Always emails. Thank you for keeping it all going. So let us know you're out there. We really appreciate it. It helps everything go. Man, I'm just, who knows, this might be the end of my tenure here on Radio Free Texas. It's been a great run. Hopefully, I'm just kidding. Hey, we did phases and stages. You know, last time we did some country. Love the country, man. We'll continue. We're gonna get into some Lyle Lovett, man, maybe next time you're here, Kurt. We've been talking a lot about Lyle Lovett lately. But right here, in defense of my position on Guilty Pleasures, Peter Gabriel, man. Peter Gabriel. So many of these British guys really start beating me down. The band Yes, you know, classic rock bands like that, just beat me. Oh, gosh. Not too big of a fan.
That's odd coming from you because you are the biggest champion of the Brit. Musically.
Champion of the Brit music. I'm a big fan.
They're great.
I guess, well, a lot of them just end up here's why I want to talk about Gabriel. Elton John or something. I mean, at some point they jump the shark. It's just, it's so useless. Rod Stewart.
Gabriel is still wearing spacesuits.
He has never let me down. He was so over the top. Always. You ever heard The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway?
Yeah.
Genesis.
Yeah.
I mean, just, it's way over the top, man. Cerebral. Weird, but man, he always had great beats, great rhythms, and great melodies, and great lyrics. He always drew me in. I don't know what it was. I think it's his falsetto.
His voice.
Voice
ubiquitous.
Is great. Ubiquitous vocal. A lot of people probably know "In Your Eyes, the Light, the Heat,
In Your Eyes,
Incomplete." We used to do that. The full band used to. I remember being on stage at Poor David's doing it.
Lost.
I believe
I get so lost sometimes. Out through the years, that show has popped. That song has popped up in sets at our acoustic shows.
Man, you got and then you got the two upbeat ones. Man, the huge videos you had for like Sledgehammer and Big Time.
Big Time.
I'm on my way. I'm making it.
Big Time.
I wanna be down your Sledgehammer. Very sign of the times. Always was very.
He was a pop culture guy.
Oh, man, his videos were always just real cutting edge and cool and fun to watch. And another thing about his videos and stuff, he never took himself real seriously, even though he was certainly a serious artist.
Yeah.
He always came across as kind of a funny guy in interviews, very charming, made silly videos. Recently, they wanted him to come out to the Oscars. He had like a little song in the movie WALL-E.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that, you know, they used to at the Oscars, every artist would come out and play their whole song.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved this last year, whenever that was, maybe a year or two ago. They said, man, we're not going to do individual songs. It's too long. So for programming's sake, we just want you to roll you out on a circular stage. You do like one verse of the song, and then they're going to do a medley of all the Oscar songs. Man, and Gabriel just said, well, you can do it without me. Just didn't show up. Loved it. Just proved
awesome.
Everything I'd always said about him. A big recordist. Yeah, so they sent out like, who came out and sang the song instead? You know, they had a...
Lady Gaga.
Whatever, she came out and did it or something. Gabriel, man, always just... always had a lot of integrity, man. Very artistic. Like a lot of guys in the 80s went through a big... Like Sting and Paul Simon.
Yeah.
Where he just puts on the colors and dances with like 200 African people. At a live show in Johannesburg. You know, kind of
yeah.
You know, he did the Biko was a big hit for him on an earlier record. I love Don't Give Up. He sings with Kate Bush.
Yeah.
Don't give up, because you have...
I was a Kate Bush fan back in...
Yeah.
She was big back in the late
80s. Yeah, she was. I had to hear that voice again. So, S.O., 1986, produced by the great Daniel Lanois, one of my favorites. L-A-N-O-I-S. I say that because you need to go to YouTube and type in Daniel Lanois, L-A-N-O-I-S.
There's some good stuff.
There's some great interviews with him, man, showing his studio. I've been very inspired by Lanois. He's definitely a musician's producer, a guy who has just got tons of gear, plays every instrument, puts out his own records, and then also produces great stuff for other people, and has his own style, kind of his own thing he does. He also produced the great Teatro by Willie Nelson, which is just a...
Awesome.
Eye-opening. I mean, you think you know Willie Nelson until he goes out with Lanois. And at that time, he really actually had a Teatro studio. Where was that? Like in New Mexico somewhere? Or California?
Yeah, it was somewhere out in the Southwest. I want to say it was near Santa Fe, maybe.
Yeah, and it was out in the desert. It was an old movie theater that Lanois rented out. And he, this is what he's known to do. I mean, he's got a couple of permanent studios in Canada where he's from, or at least one in some loft.
Yeah, outside of Toronto.
Somewhere. But he will inhabit some long forgotten building, Lanois, moving all of his stuff. And he did that in Teatro. And I think he did the Emmylou Harris record out there at that time. And then he did a Teatro by Willie Nelson in this old movie theater. Just great stuff. And then he also did Oh Mercy by Bob Dylan, where he inhabited a forgotten New Orleans mansion with no air conditioning. And recorded in August or something. He and Dylan, some local guys, doing.
And they did not get along a lot during that process, did they?
Right. Yeah. No. Lanois, very difficult to work with. You also see him a lot on videos. He co-produced The Unforgettable Fire for U2 with the great Brian Eno. But there's some good stuff on YouTube as well. The young U2 recording that record. Where Bono's singing Pride in the Name of Love. He's in the name of love. You see Lanois watching him and talking to him and say, man, something's really coming out in your vocal here. And coaching him through it, getting him to hit those notes and concentrate on what he's doing to really send that now famous chorus over the top. Pretty eye-opening, man, as a producer. So Peter Gabriel, man, he's never let me down. Some of his recent stuff, like Digging in the Dirt. I wasn't that recent. That's probably 10 years old.
Yeah, that was 10, 12 years ago.
But, man, Love Town's a great song. I don't know what record that was on. This is Love Town.
You know, I saw that documentary with him. It was on his 2002 tour. It was kind of a comeback tour for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, it was incredible.
Was it cool?
Man,
I've never seen a whole lot of his live stuff.
What shocked me was he was playing just... 20,000 seat arenas all over the country.
Man, and he was big. Yeah, he is big.
You know, tickets just sold immediately to every show. And, I mean, he's almost completely bald. What little hair he has left is just snow white.
On the sides,
looks, he used to be really kind of a sharp looking guy. You know, he looks like an old man now.
Yeah, he's older, sure.
But he was up there just perfectly choreographed
with the headset,
just wearing
mic.
A spacesuit,
I think what I was admired about him, like you say, and he's a real artist. He's a musician's guy, produces his own stuff. You know, he co-produced this with Lanois, and a consummate performer. He's rare in that he can be really artistic without seeming to be really pretentious.
Yeah,
in his live performances, even though they are kind of productions and things.
Yeah.
Kind of all with a sense of fun, a sense of adventure,
yeah.
a sense of discovery that we're all in on. And we're able to listen to this his tracks. And because it was so cutting edge and stuff, it kind of holds up pretty well, surprisingly.
Yeah, it really
You
does.
Definitely have the keyboard kind of drums and some things on some tracks, but it was just different, man. He was always very different.
And one thing about him,
carving his own path.
You see bands like the Flaming Lips, who do all these theatrics and crazy stuff.
Yeah,
live.
Dude.
Man, they got a lot of that stuff from Gabriel.
Oh, dude, he was always
getting in the bubble
guy.
And doing all
that.
Yeah, I mean it. He was very much where a lot of that stuff. Where rock and roll took hold of that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
it really was.
Yeah, and he just never seemed like he ever had a whole lot of embarrassing press or anything. Just some ridiculous
He did spend some time in an insane asylum.
What?
Yeah.
Peter Gabriel?
Yeah.
When?
Oh, 18 years ago.
An insane asylum?
Well, they're a mental care facility. He was having some problems.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah.
Jeez, well, that's too bad. I never heard that. Had a nervous breakdown or something, huh?
I'll have to look that up. I think he's a little off kilter.
A little off kilter.
Who isn't?
Every genius.
Hey, I am on my way to one right
now. You're a genius.
Here.
It's coming.
I'm leaving here.
You already had your midlife crisis. When was that? When you're about 22?
22.
You had a midlife crisis.
Oh yeah.
Very alarming. Now you moved a little bit beyond
very
that.
Very alarming.
You're moving towards your third life. Nervous breakdown kind of.
Yeah.
Where you realize this is as good as it's going to get. And you need to be happy with that.
Can't wait.
Well, good luck with that, Sal.
Thanks.
We have covered a lot of ground here.
I'm tearing up right now.
Prog rock, Hooting the Blowfish. Oh, my gosh. It's been a good run, Texas. We love you out there.
Thanks for coming.
No. We hope to be just enlightening your life. Yes, we know you're sitting there with your surrounded by your Robert Earl Keen CDs as well. You should be. But the next time you see that Peter Gabriel record in the racks for $3 at half price.
And there's a shitload of them.
There's a lot of them. He sold a lot of them. Man, it's only got 8 songs on it. After My Own Heart. It's got 7-8 songs on there maybe. Each track is fully realized. Fully realized presentation. Its own little chapter. Oh, just great stuff, man. Great vocals. Great arrangements. Fun songs. And In Your Eyes, just a great song. It's been covered a lot.
Oh, man, it's one of the classics.
And it's been just the chord progression on it, the melody, and just it goes to that big chorus, man. In Your Eyes.
And if you can't sit around and get drunk to Big Time, then you don't like drinking songs. Next time you're twisting open a Shiner Bock in your back porch, just put it on Big Time.
And I will be your honeybee.
You'll be drunk before the second chorus.
Big Time, Sledgehammer, Red Rain.
Hear that voice again.
Every song on there, great. So, Peter Gabriel, well, thanks a lot, Kurt South, for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
As always, man, good luck with everything. Kurt has a baby due very soon here in a few days. Any day, right?
About 72 hours.
Dude, oh, wow, man. Well, good luck with that, man.
Hey,
sleepless nights return.
Yes.
All worth it, my friend. All worth it. Good luck. Thanks for fitting in here today. And for all of you out there, RadioFreeTexas.org, PhilPritchett.com. Email us, as always, Phil@PhilPritchett.com, or call me 817-733-5256. Come record at Trinidad, or most importantly, book the full band. Call me. Say, Phil, my kid's getting out of college, or I'm turning 30, or whatever. What would it cost to have you and the guys show up in the backyard, man? We'll cook you some steaks and give you a few beers. You might be surprised. Give us a call. We're open for business. Well, until next week, for Kurt South, I'm Phil Pritchett signing off on the P2 Podcast. Be good to each other out there. We'll see you soon.